Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Big E here. This is Law for Virginia Law Enforcement Officers, and it's episode 98. In the last two episodes, we've been talking about ECO and TDO uses of force. What is lawful for law enforcement in executing orders, temporary detention orders, and emergency custody orders when you have somebody who has a mental illness? They are not willing or able to volunteer for hospitalization and treatment, and yet they still need hospitalization or treatment. And so we talked about the legal requirements under the statute. We talked about examples of cases involving whether or not there was probable cause for an ECO or a TDO. And then we talked about uses of force, uses of non-deadly force and uses of deadly force, and how courts evaluate someone's use of force in an ECO or TDO context, which is challenging because there's not a crime at issue, right? And we know from Graham versus Connor, the very first thing you always look at in any use of force case is the severity of the crime at issue. So if you're interested in those episodes, definitely go back and check those out. They provide a good foundation, I think, for what we're going to talk about. But today, I want to talk about something a little bit different. I want to talk about a question that I get a lot from law enforcement officers. And in today's episode, I want to be really clear that in a lot of ways, if you stop listening right now, you're not going to know any less than somebody who listens to the end of this episode all the way to the end, which is to say, you're not going to get a clear answer at the end of today's episode, because there doesn't appear to be a clear answer under the law to this question. And yet I get the question all the time, and it's a really good question. And here's the question. The question is, if you have a, for example, ECO order for somebody, and they are inside of their house, is that order a lawful authority into force entry into their home and take them into custody, right? Because it seems like it's a pretty simple question. I mean, we know very clearly, and we have known for, 50 years, that a arrest warrant is lawful authority to enter someone's home under the Fourth Amendment to take them into custody, so long as you have what the U.S. Supreme Court calls a reason to believe that that person is inside the residence. An arrest warrant is basically a search warrant for that person's body, for that person themselves. And, you know, this question of what's a reason to believe, the Fourth Circuit dealt with this only a couple of years ago, and said reason to believe basically is probable cause. You have to have probable cause that the person is inside the residence. The Court of Appeals of Virginia has never, and the Virginia Supreme Court has never actually really given a definition to that reason to believe standard. So we know what the Fourth Circuit thinks. We don't know what the Virginia Supreme Court thinks about this issue. But, you know, we still have a pretty good standard. Although I think it's interesting that, you know, here we are 50 years later, we still don't have a real clear interpretation of what's a reason to believe that the person is inside. We don't have that from the Virginia courts. But what we don't have from either court is a ruling one way or the other about whether or not a ECO or a TDO is lawful authority to force entry into someone's house, just like an arrest warrant, and take them into custody. And there's certainly a logical reason to think that it would be that kind of authority. In other words, just like a arrest warrant, a ECO is a judicially issued order to take someone into custody. And so, just as a logical matter, it makes sense that you would have the same authority to take that person into custody in an ECO, just like with an arrest warrant. Just as a logical matter, sure, it makes sense, but there is no court that has ruled that way yet, because the issue really hasn't come up in a clear way. And so we don't have somebody who can say, yeah, logically makes sense, and here's a court ruling that says it's okay. So other than the logical issue, how can we find a way to get an answer to this question? Well, the first thing I want to do is step back from the issue and deal with something that I hear a lot from law enforcement officers. And that is the statement, well, if we don't go in, if we don't serve this order, and this person hurts themselves or does something bad, we're going to be responsible. We're going to have liability. If we don't serve this order, if we have the order in hand and we don't kick in the door to their house and we don't force entry and we don't take them into custody, we're going to face liability. And I want to push back on that a little bit and point out that the law in the United States, at least under 1983, under your main source of liability, which is going to be 42 U.S.C. 1983, which we talked about a lot in the last couple podcasts, does not require the government to protect an individual against private violence if they're in a situation where they're not in government custody, they're not in police custody, they're just in their own house, away from the actual government control. And this starts from a case, DeShaney versus Winnebago. And it's a really sad case. All these cases are going to be sad cases, but it's a 1989 case, same year as Graham versus Connor, where a child was living with his father. His relatives complained to Child Protective Services that child was being physically abused, and CPS intervened with counseling. They entered into a voluntary agreement with the father, but they found insufficient evidence to take the boy away from his father. And so, unfortunately, the father beat the child again and caused the child to suffer brain damage. And so the mother sued Child Protective Services and the city under 42 U.S.C. 1983, that federal civil rights litigation code section. And the allegation was depriving him of his civil rights. But the U.S. Supreme Court in this case ruled that nothing in the language of the Constitution requires the state to protect the life, liberty, and property of its citizens against invasion by private actors. The court continued that our cases have recognized that the Constitution generally confers no affirmative right to governmental aid, even where that aid may be necessary to secure the life, property, liberty, or property interests of individuals, of which the government itself may not deprive them of. And so the result is that the government did not have an obligation to intervene at all in that case. The court writes, we conclude that a state's failure to protect an individual against private violence does not constitute a violation of the Constitution. So the sad lesson here is that it's very difficult to be successfully sued for doing nothing. Now, here you might say, yeah, but I have an order in my hand. This is different. This is not making a decision about whether I'm going to intervene or not. I have a court order, and I have to serve this order, and if I don't and the person gets hurt because I don't do what I'm supposed to do, which is serve this order, then I'm going to be successfully sued. Well, that takes us to another U.S. Supreme Court case. This is a case called Castle Rock versus Gonzalez, and this is a case from 2005. This is a case where police failed to respond to repeated reports over several hours that her estranged husband had taken their three children in violation of a restraining order that had been issued against him. Now, Colorado law stated that police are required, they shall serve a temporary restraining order. And nevertheless, the police here did not go and serve the order. The order had been issued, but the police kept not serving it, didn't serve it. And she's calling saying, you gotta go find this guy, you gotta serve it. He's taken my children, da da da. And ultimately the husband murders these three children. He then drives to the police department and he opens fire on the police department. The police kill him, and that's how they track back and they discover the children's bodies. And again, the plaintiff sues under 42 U.S.C. 1983. And again, the Supreme Court here dismisses the case. The court writes, the benefit that a third party may receive from having someone else arrested for a crime does not trigger the protections under the Due Process Clause, neither in its procedural nor its substantive manifestations. And the court continues here, the law does not create a system by which police departments are generally held financially accountable for crimes that better policing might have prevented. And so it's kind of a funny way to start the conversation, but I think it's important because, again, if you're standing at the threshold of a door and you're trying to decide, am I going to kick in the door of this person's house in order to, presumably forcibly take them into custody based on an order, If you're saying, well, I have to do this, I have absolutely no choice, I have to kick in this door, I have to force this person to get in custody, because if I don't, I'm going to be successfully sued, this is the opportunity for you to kind of step back and say, well, maybe that's not true. Maybe that's not what the law says. Well, again, then, what is the authority? In other words, we still don't want people to hurt themselves. We still don't want people to hurt each other. And if we're facing a situation where there really is a threat to public safety, that somebody might hurt themselves or hurt somebody else, when is it that we are permitted to enter someone's home, frankly, with or without an order in hand? And that takes us sort of back to this issue of, you know, what is the authority to enter a home under the Fourth Amendment if I don't have a warrant? And so we know that there's only three ways into a home, right? Lawfully under the Fourth Amendment. There's consent, a warrant of some kind, or exigent circumstances. And for a long time, there was speculation in the law that there was a fourth way in, that is to say, the community caretaker exception, that somehow we would be able to enter someone's home as sort of a welfare check on them, right, for a non-law enforcement purpose. But that issue got resolved by the U.S. Supreme Court in a case called Coniglia versus Strom in 2021. And this was a case where police performed a wellness check on a plaintiff after his wife had reported that he might be suicidal. And after arranging for him to get a psychiatric evaluation, and that was all consensual, they were leaving, he said, okay, I'll get help, but just please don't go inside my house and please don't take my guns. Police then entered his house and confiscated his guns, contrary to what he had asked them to do or told them to do. And they collected one of the guns. One of the guns was the gun that he said he was going to shoot himself with. So that's the reason why they're seizing the guns. But he sued the law enforcement officers for violating the Fourth Amendment, for going into his home without his consent, without a warrant of some kind, and without exigent circumstances, because at the time he was being transported for a psychiatric evaluation. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court says, yeah, there is a community caretaker exception to the Fourth Amendment that covers, for example, vehicles, like in Cady versus Dombrowski, where the U.S. Supreme Court had held that a warrantless search of an impounded vehicle for an unsecured firearm didn't violate the Fourth Amendment. And there, the court had ruled, Kate and Cady, that officers who patrol public highways are often called to discharge non-criminal community caretaking functions, like responding to a disabled vehicle or responding to a crash on the side of the road. But that's not an exception to the warrant requirement that gets you into somebody's house, right? The most protected place under the Fourth Amendment. And so although the district court and the First Circuit Court of Appeals had dismissed the lawsuit against these officers for entering the house and taking his guns, the U.S. Supreme Court, in a 9-0 ruling, ruled that the community caretaker exception does not create a standalone doctrine that justifies a warrantless entry into a home and a search and seizure inside the home. The court writes here, what is reasonable for vehicles is different from what is reasonable for homes. Now, you think 9-0, wow, that's a really clear ruling. Well, yeah, except at that point, all the agreement falls apart and the justices all write their own separate opinions. And several justices write about, hey, look, what happens if police find out that somebody might be in danger or in trouble or sick or injured inside their house? And so several justices write opinions about, hey, what would happen if the neighbors reported that somebody might be sick or injured inside the house? Chief Justice Roberts expressed a view that maybe a warrant isn't required when there's a need to assist people who are seriously injured or threatened with injury. Justice Kavanaugh wrote a separate opinion where he said, I think police officers should be able to enter homes without a warrant where they're reasonably trying to prevent a potential suicide or to help an elderly person who's been out of contact and might have fallen and suffered injury. And so the court never answers any of those questions. It clearly says community caretaker is an exception, but beyond that, what the court just does is raise more questions in these different separate opinions from these judges where they say, you know, one day we're going to have to figure this out. We don't have clear law on this. Is it exigent circumstances if somebody's been missing for several days? Is it exigent after hours or days have passed? If the police entered a home without a warrant to see if somebody needed help, is that a violation of the Fourth Amendment? Justice Alito says it's if you're entering for a non-law enforcement purpose, maybe that's not even a Fourth Amendment issue at all. So the court gives us all these questions but doesn't answer them. And that puts us back to where we started this podcast, which is, okay, if I've got an ECO in hand and the person's inside, can I force entry into their home? Well, logically speaking, again, we agree that if an ECO is like an arrest warrant, then yeah. But we don't know if a court's going to treat an ECO like an arrest warrant because there's no case that says an ECO is equivalent to an arrest warrant. So we're back at this question of, well, what's my authority to force entry into someone's home? Well, fortunately, we do have a really interesting case from the Virginia Supreme Court in a case called Merid versus Commonwealth, which is a case, Virginia Court of Appeals from 2021. And Merid is a case where officers respond to an apartment for a dispatch about a possible suicide threat. Now, they don't have an ECO in hand, but it appears to them to be an ECO situation. The defendant's brother meets the officers outside the apartment. He's very concerned for his brother because based on text messages where the defendant had been texting him, he talked about joining his deceased mother and he asked his brother to forgive him. The brother told the officers he hadn't been able to reach Mr. Merid all day. The brother indicated that the Merid's car was in the parking lot. And so they say, okay, great, well, let's verify that. So they run the tags in the car. It doesn't come back to Merid. And they say, well, it doesn't come back to him. It comes back to some woman. And the brother says, well, yeah, he doesn't own the car, but that's the woman that he's been spending time with recently. He's been spending a lot of time with her over the course of the last month or two. So officers respond to the apartment and they bang on the door. He doesn't respond to the door despite repeated requests. He keeps saying, I'm getting dressed. They say, do you need help? Do you need medical help? He says, no. But they hear what they describe as an alarming sound, like sort of somebody's gargling or throwing up. They're coughing and moaning, like somebody's in pain. That's what they can hear inside. So officers find a key to the apartment, and they enter the apartment. Now, again, there's three ways lawfully into a home. There's consent, a warrant of some kind, or exigent circumstances. They don't have his consent. They don't have a warrant. So it's got to be exigent circumstances. Now, they get inside, and when they get in, they can see Mr. Merid is actively stabbing himself in the throat. So they fight him. They arrest him. They get the knife free. They get him subdued and quickly are able to treat his injuries, get rescue to respond, and medics get in and save Merid's life. Now, what's interesting is now they're standing in the living room, and one of the officers notices from his point of view in the sort of dining living area that he can see the entire apartment, but he can't see into the bedroom. So the officer kind of steps 3 or 4 feet into the bedroom. He opens the door, and there he sees a woman's body laying on the ground, tied to a chair. Her head is wrapped in plastic, and there's dried blood pooled on the floor around her. Merid was remember, Merid was spending time with this woman recently. This woman is the person who owned that car in the parking lot. And in fact, it's her name on the rental agreement, not Merid's. So officers at that point are like, oh, so they step out, they call detectives, they obtain a search warrant, and ultimately they figure out that Merid had murdered this woman. And here the court reviews two things. One is the entry into the apartment, and second is the sweep around the apartment once they've entered. So today we're mostly concerned with the entry into the apartment here, right? And the court here says that officers had an objectively reasonable basis for believing that a person within the apartment was in need of immediate aid, whether welcomed or not. And the court repeated here that law enforcement officers may enter a home without a warrant to render emergency assistance to an injured occupant or to protect an occupant from imminent injury. Right, and that we know as the exigent circumstances exception to the search warrant requirement. So again, exigent circumstances requires you to have probable cause. You still have to have probable cause, but here it's not probable cause of a crime because we're not investigating any kind of crime. So here instead, it's going to be probable cause of a danger to human life or some kind of some need to assist in an emergency, to assist an injured occupant or protect an occupant from imminent injury. Now, the other thing the court deals with here, which is interesting, I think, is the sort of sweep, right, which is the sweep around the area. And the court here says, well, yes, officers acted reasonably in entering to render emergency aid. They also acted reasonably in conducting a security sweep of the remaining area of the residence. Because here the court said it was reasonable under the facts of this particular case. You can't always do a security sweep. It's not something that you can do every single time. But here you've got it's reasonable to believe that there might be somebody else there who's in danger. The court looked at a case here, sort of applied a test. One, you have to have an objectively reasonable basis to believe there's an immediate need to protect the lives or safety of somebody else, and the manner and scope of your sweep has to be reasonable. So in this case, the court says, as far as the officers were concerned, there might have been a pet, a child, or an adult in need behind that closed bedroom door. It was reasonable for the officers to ensure the premises and any other occupants were safe and secure before they left. The court says here, in fact, it would have been irresponsible for them to have done otherwise. Right? So here the court's applying basically the emergency aid exception, the exigent circumstances, but the emergency aid part of the exigent circumstances exception to the warrant requirement to this situation. And so what we find here then is that we're back kind of a basic Fourth Amendment analysis, standing at that door saying, can we force entry or not, in asking here whether or not there is some kind of reasonable belief, right? Which I think, you know, the Fourth Circuit thinks reasonable belief is kind of probable cause. It's certainly more than reasonable suspicion, right? But it's got to be an objective analysis. There's got to be facts that you can point to that say, here is why I believe that there is a threat to someone's safety, that there's a need to assist an injured occupant or a need to protect an occupant from imminent injury. Now, I should say, I said it's probable cause, and I think you're definitely in a good position if you've got probable cause. There is an argument that you need something less than probable cause, but something more than reasonable suspicion. There are cases, like a case called Commonwealth versus Hobson from 2005, that says that this reasonable belief standard that was set by the U.S. Supreme Court for the emergency aid exception is something different than probable cause, right? And the idea being, you know, if you get a 911 call and it's, you know, house on fire or something like that, why would we be using a probable cause analysis for something that you're doing that's totally not criminal related? It's just, I'm responding because I got a report that this house is on fire. And so I'm forcing entry because it's reasonable for me to think this is the right house, it's on fire. And so I'm going to, you know, force entry. Again, this goes to Justice Alito's argument that maybe this is not a Fourth Amendment issue at all. But, you know, if I could tell you, here's how much of cases that you can rely on that say that that's true, then I would happily tell you that. But I just don't, there's not a lot of cases out there that articulate that enough that you can rely on it. So again, you're at the door, you have a potentially suicidal person, you know, what is the law? How would the law look at that entry? And here, a good example, I think, to look at is Clowinger versus McDevitt, which is a 2009 case from the Fourth Circuit. And in Clowinger had made previous suicidal threats, and other officers had responded to those threats before and found firearms in the residence. So this particular day, police receive another report, this time from the VA hospital, that Clowinger had threatened suicide, and the VA hospital had asked officers to make a welfare check at Clowinger's house. So Clowinger, when they get there, they find Clowinger, and he's intoxicated, and he tells police to get off his property and slams the door on the officers. So the officers continue to communicate with him, and he demands to be taken to the VA hospital. And the officers say, well, look, we can't take you to the VA hospital because that's in West Virginia and we're in Virginia. So we can't take you across the border, but we can take you somewhere to get help. And he says, well, if you're not going to take me to the VA hospital, then get off my property. And if you don't get off my property, then I'm going to kill all of you and I'm going to kill myself. So the police are sort of stymied. They call the VA hospital and they try to find the person that Clowinger talked to. They can't find the person that Clowinger talked to. But they do talk to a nurse who was familiar with Clowinger. And she reports that Clowinger had a history of calling the hospital and threatening suicide. And so the officers talk about, you know, ask her, you know, look, does this person meet the criteria for an emergency custody order based on what you know about him, based on what we're reporting? In other words, does he have a mental illness? And is there a substantial likelihood that as a result of his mental illness, he will in the near future cause serious physical harm to himself or others based on the recent behavior that we're relating to you or suffer serious harm due to his lack of capacity to take care of himself? And she says, yes, he's a mental illness. Yes, there's a substantial likelihood that as a result of this illness, he's going to hurt himself based on what you've reported and based on what we know from our files. She agrees that he's in need of hospitalization or treatment. And it's apparent from the officer's conversations with Clowinger that he's unwilling to volunteer for hospitalization or treatment. So under the Virginia Code, under 37.2808 subsection G, which we've been talking about for the last couple episodes, it's apparent here that he meets the criteria for an ECO. So the officers decide to ECO Mr. Clowinger. So again, Clowinger is inside of a house and they're outside the house, right? So we're going to have to figure out, is it lawful to, do we have probable cause for the ECO? And if so, can we take Clowinger into custody even though he's inside? So they get to the door and they coax Clowinger to open the door slightly, just enough that they can grab him and pull him out from the door onto the ground. Now, I want to point out here, the officers do not enter the house. But for the Fourth Amendment, that doesn't really matter. If somebody's in their home and I get them to open the door and then I pull them out of their home and throw them on the ground, I've effectively entered their home, right? I've still broken the threshold of their house and pulled them out. So this is not a situation where he's in his front yard or in his curtilage. He's in his house. They get him to open the door. They pull him out. So they, you know, have effectively entered his home. And then, even though they don't physically step inside, and then during the fight, unfortunately, they break one of his arms while trying to take him into custody. But they do get him into custody. They do get an ECO for him. And so the first question here is, do the officers have probable cause for the ECO? And the Fourth Circuit looks at that and says, well, on the facts, the court holds that the officers had probable cause to seize Mr. Clowinger and detain him for purposes of psychological evaluation. So we do agree here that under 37.2, under the criteria we've talked about, Clowinger meets the criteria for an ECO. But the court says, this doesn't end our inquiry into the reasonableness of their conduct, right? So, because again, just because you have probable cause to take someone to ECO doesn't give me the lawful authority to just enter their home automatically. The only three ways to lawfully enter someone's home are consent, a warrant of some kind, or exigent circumstances. So they don't have his consent, clearly, because he said, if you don't leave, I'm going to kill you. They don't have a warrant of any kind, which again, we don't know if a warrant, if the ECO would be a warrant or not. But here, the court says the officers do have exigent circumstances. The initial call to the VA, coupled with the knowledge of Clowinger's prior suicide threats and the belief that he possessed firearms, established to an objectively reasonable police officer that Clowinger was a danger to himself. And the court continues here, the situation at the house was too unstable for any of the three officers there to leave the premises to obtain the emergency commitment order. And so the court here concludes, and again, these are all quotes from the court, accordingly, the circumstances facing the defendants, the officers here, were exigent, and we hold that the undisputed facts in this case establish that the officer's conduct was objectively reasonable. And so the court dismisses the use of force lawsuit and finds that the officers did lawfully enter the home, so to speak, to take Clowinger into custody. Now, that brings us back to the question we had at the beginning, which is the ECO a lawful order to enter someone's house? Well, we still don't know what a court would say about whether that ECO is equivalent to an arrest warrant. Now, I will say, as I've always said, it's always better to have a warrant. So if you're standing at that doorway and you can't figure out what to do, if there's time to get an ECO, then by all means, it would be better to have the ECO in hand, because then you've got some judicial order that not only is a finding by a judge that you have probable cause. So you avoid the situation they had in Clowinger where they had to articulate it and get a court to agree that there was probable cause for the ECO. You could skip all that by having a judicial finding of an ECO. That would be really good, right? But you may also still have authority to enter the home with the ECO. And like we said, logically speaking, it makes sense that an ECO would be like an arrest warrant. We just don't have a court ruling that says that's true. And so what we're left with is that we don't have consent, clearly, because the person's not letting us in. We don't know if the warrant is enough. So we're left with that exigent circumstances exception. And, you know, that sort of makes sense in the end, because if you're kicking in the door of someone's house, that's a pretty violent entry. And, you know, hopefully you're only doing that when you really absolutely positively need to in order to protect community safety. And hopefully not just doing it because you say, well, I have to kick in the door of this house, or otherwise, if I don't kick in the door, I'm going to get sued, right? Because I think we've tried to cover that as sort of mythology. So I hope today was helpful. I hope today was interesting. I'm sorry there wasn't an answer to the question that we dealt with, but sometimes there isn't an answer to these questions. They're still worth exploring. And if you like the podcast, tell your friends. We're on SoundCloud, Stitcher Podcasts, we're on Apple Podcasts. I know a lot of people have been asking for Spotify. I will try to get that done. I really do need to sit down and try to get on Spotify if I can for you. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. If you don't like the podcast, don't tell your friends. But today, that's all from me. That's all from Big E. Stay safe and don't get captured.